Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And a very good morning to you from Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Glad you joined us today, this 17th day of November 2005. Going to have an abbreviated show today, once again, as we still work on a number of issues here at the Tyranny Response Network. Remember, as always, visit tyrannyresponse.com, and if you're able to volunteer some time or a spot that's on a high hill that can be used for broadcasting purposes with DSL connection, stuff like that, please get in touch with us. We do need to hear from you right away. You can find the tyrannyresponse.com website on the World Wide Web, obviously, and then you can simply scroll under the Contact tab and email anybody that's there. You can also give Chuck a call directly and leave a message on his phone at 271-6761 and let him know. All right, we are going to check the weather right now because that's our first order of business.
Right now in Greenville, Spartanburg, it's 34 degrees, downtown 36, Anderson 32, Clemson 37. Pretty cold. Today it's sunny, highs in the upper 50s, and north winds 10 to 15 miles per hour.
Now remember, our phone numbers in case you want to call the show this morning are 864-244-9904. That's 864-244-9904. Or you can try 864-244-8177 or 864-201-6955. We'll be glad to hear from you. Well, in today's top stories, we have George Bush taking a hard line on North Korea. Well, George Bush is just looking for another way to deflect the current attention from his disasters by going and attacking somebody else, probably. And there's no surprise there. That's how you build an empire. You keep people on their heels, never let them sit down and think about things. You always move on to the next crisis and disaster, or even create one if you need to, I suppose. We have more people slain in Iraq, five USGIs, and there's also a number of others, blown up or near a car bomb that were harmed. So the count up there continues to roll up as more and more people are dying in Iraq. Dick Cheney's joining those who are defending the Republican move against Democrats and other detractors that are, including us, for their insane war in Iraq. The country that didn't aggress us, that there was no reason to aggress, for us to aggress them or to defend ourselves against them, and all built on a pack of lies. George Bush is a liar. He completely lied to the American people. And I'm not a leftist telling you that, folks. If you're listening to this and you think I'm a leftist, haven't listened long enough yet. We're about as right as they come, and we just see that George Bush is a fraud. The guy has totally propagated this war based on false intelligence and just in order to promote his own power. In fact, there's some reason for us to believe that even the 9/11 bombings were something to do with George Bush. Now, I'm not one who tacks on to a lot of conspiracy theories, people, but I'll tell you what, there have been conspiracies in history. Judas conspired against Jesus Christ. Ehud conspired against Eglon. There have been many, many cases of conspiracy, and in this particular case of the empire, it looks like the conspiracy against Julius Caesar is similar to what's going on here today. You have an empire kind of republic, semi-republic, or used to be a republic, and now there are conspiracies going on behind the scenes. I don't know if there's one to plot to assassinate George W. Bush, but there's certainly a conspiracy going on, I would think. Looking at the details of this 9/11 business, there are a lot of people who have claimed the 9/11 piece was in fact partly due, at least in part due, by George W. Bush. When I look at that data and I listen to Infowars.com or some other folks who have brought up stuff on the internet, it sure seems like it was an inside job. There's a lot. I mean, I'm not a mechanical engineer. I admit that, and I don't know everything about the ways things are built and how they can actually fall down through heat and stuff. But when I see that steel melts at 2,750 degrees. The kerosene only burns at 1,300 or 1,400 degrees, or the jet fuel. I begin to question dramatically whether or not it would be possible for all the stuff inside the building to heat up substantially to the 1,800, 1,900 degrees, whatever it would take to bend the steel there. Then the whole business about Building 7 falling down, when there was nothing, no reason for it to fall down, just sort of fell down, it was like it was purely a planned demolition, is also very, very troubling to me. So at any rate, those are some of my reasons that have really made it a bit appealing to me. There's also the interviews, the eyewitness interviews with different people, firefighters and the news reporters, eyewitnesses who heard explosions going off in the building beforehand. Sure seems like, to me at any rate, that all those eyewitnesses, it'd be hard to concoct, you know, get all those people together and make such a thing happen. Anyway, here was a story that came up and said, BYU physicist or physics professor thinks bombs, not planes, toppled the World Trade Center buildings. All right, now here's a guy, and he's probably a Mormon, all right, which I should hold against him to some extent because it's a false religion. But nevertheless, he's a physics professor. He's got a PhD apparently in physics. And he says, he's saying that bombs, not planes, toppled the World Trade Center buildings. It's part of this conspiracy. This is this is from the Deseret Morning News, and Elaine Jarvik is the author or the reporter. The physics of 9/11, including how fast and symmetrically one of the World Trade Center buildings fell, prove that official explanations of the collapses are wrong, says a Brigham Young University physics professor. In fact, it's like there were pre-positioned explosives in all three buildings at Ground Zero, says Stephen E. Jones. In a paper posted online Tuesday and accepted for peer-reviewed publication next year, Jones adds his voice to those previous skeptics, including the authors of the website WTC7.net, whose research Jones quotes. Jones' articles can be found at the physics.byu.edu/web/research/energy site. Jones, who conducts research in fusion and other solar energy at BYU, is calling for an independent international scientific investigation guided not by politicized notions and constraints, but rather by observations and calculations. It's quite plausible that explosives were pre-planted in all three buildings and set off after the two plane crashes, which were actually a diversion tactic, he writes. Muslims are probably not to blame for bringing down the World Trade Center buildings after all, Jones writes. As for speculation about who might have planted the explosives, Jones said, I don't usually go there, there's no point in dragging that, doing that until we do the scientific investigation. Previous investigations, including those of FEMA, the 9/11 Commission, and NIST, the National Institutes of Standards and Technology, ignore the physics and chemistry of what happened on September 11, 2001, to the Twin Towers in the 47-story building known as World Trade Center 7. He says the official explanation that fires caused structural damage that caused the buildings to collapse can't be backed up by either testing or history, he says. Jones acknowledges that there have been junk science conspiracy theories about what happened on 9/11, but the explosive demolition hypothesis better satisfies tests of repeatability and parsimony, and therefore is not junk science. In a 9,000-word article that Jones says will be published in the book The Hidden History of 9/11 by Elsevier, Jones offers these arguments. The three buildings collapsed nearly symmetrically, falling down into their footprints, a phenomenon associated with controlled demolition. And even then, it's very difficult, he says. Why would terrorists undertake straight-down collapses of World Trade Center 7 and the towers when toppling over falls would require much less work and would do much more damage in downtown Manhattan, Jones asked. And where would they obtain the necessary skills and access to the building for a symmetrical implosion anyway? The symmetry data emphasized here, along with other data, provides strong evidence for an inside job. Another argument. No steel framing before or after the World Trade Center buildings has ever collapsed due to fire, but explosives can effectively sever steel columns, he says. WTC-7, which was not hit by hijacked planes, collapsed in 6.6 seconds, just 0.6 of a second, 6 tenths of a second longer than it would take an object dropped from the roof to hit the ground. Where is the delay that must be expected due to a conservation of momentum? One of the foundational laws of physics, he asks. That is, as upper falling floors strike lower floors and intact steel support columns, the fall must be significantly impeded by the impacted mass. How do the upper floors fall so quickly, then, and still conserve momentum in collapsing buildings? The paradox, he says, is easily resolved by the explosive demolition hypothesis, whereby explosives quickly remove from lower floor material, including steel support columns, and allow near free fall speed collapses. These observations were not analyzed by FEMA, NIST, or the 9/11 Commission, he says. With non-explosive caused collapse, there would typically be a piling up of shattering concrete. But most of the material of the towers was converted to flour-like powder while the buildings were falling, he says. How can we understand this strange behavior without explosives? Remarkable, amazing, and demanding scrutiny since the U.S. government-funded reports failed to analyze this phenomenon. Horizontal puffs of smoke, known as squibs, are observed proceeding up the side of the building, a phenomenon common when pre-positioned explosives are used to demolish buildings, he says. Steel supports were partly evaporated, but it would require temperatures near 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit to evaporate steel, and neither office materials nor diesel fuel can generate temperatures that hot. Fires caused by jet fuel from the hijacked planes lasted a few minutes, and most office materials would burn out within about 20 minutes in any given location, he says. Molten metal found in the debris of the World Trade Center may have been the result of high-temperature reaction of commonly used explosives such as thermite, he said. Buildings not felled by explosives have insufficient directed energy to result in melting of large quantities of metal, Jones says. Multiple loud explosions in rapid sequence were reported by numerous observers in and near the towers, and these explosions occurred far below the region where the plane struck, he says. Jones says he became interested in the physics of the World Trade Center collapse after attending a talk last spring given by a woman who had a near-death experience. The woman mentioned in passing that if you think the World Trade Center buildings came down just due to fire, you have a lot of surprises ahead of you. Jones remembers, at which point everyone turned around me, started applauding. Following several months of study, he presented his findings at a talk at BYU in September. Jones said he would like the government to release 6,899 photographs and 6,977 segments of video footage for independent scrutiny. He would also like to analyze a small sample of the molten metal found at Ground Zero. Wonder if they're going to let him do it. Well, isn't that an interesting article? To me, it's interesting. Deseret News. This is a PhD in physics. I assume he knows what he's talking about. He certainly knows more than I. He's using things, talking about things I have no idea about. It's easy to deceive the ignorant, but taking him at his word, since he is a scholar and a physicist, this seems pretty credible. This is some of the stuff I'm telling you about, folks. It's why we should think that the 9/11 business is an inside job in order to promote the interests of George Bush and his cronies. Why would he do that? Well, because he wants power. Because he wants to, I don't know if he wants to bring us into martial law necessarily, but he wants to have a power-laden, driven administration. Something that's propelled by fear, by public fear, so that he might indeed be able to stand where he is and continue on. He may do it again. And this guy is not only not a Christian in my mind, he's a liar and possibly just a criminal, George W. Bush. I'm sorry if that offends you, but it'll take it from someone on the right who's analyzing the situation and watching this guy's actions and not listening just to what his lips say. This guy is turning us the wrong way, and we need to be prepared to rally against it. You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be back in just a minute.
The homeschooler-friendly TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. The Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments of the American Constitution. Amendment 1. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedoms of speech, or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble, and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Amendment 2. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed. Amendment 3. No soldier shall, in time of peace, be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. Amendment 4. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Amendment 5. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces, or in the militia, when in actual service in time of war or public danger, nor shall any person be subject to the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Amendment 6. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. Amendment 7. In suits at common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. Amendment 8. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. Amendment 9. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Amendment 10. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people.
Government is the great fiction through which everybody endeavors to live at the expense of everybody else. Frederick Bastiat.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, the 17th day of November 2005, an abbreviated show today. Hoping that we can get some volunteers and some helpers, especially right now, folks. We need a spot in the Greenville area where we can have our signal transmitted from. Now, if you happen to know someone in the Greenville area with a high piece of ground that happens to have a high-speed internet connection and power to it, well, we'd love to hear from you. It'd be very important for us to do so. If you can help out in any way, folks, give a shout to someone at the Tyranny Response Network today. That's you can reach us at the tyrannyresponse.com website. Just go under the Contacts tab, and you'll find a number of emails there. You can also give a call to Chuck at 271-6761, and hopefully we'll make good use of whatever opportunities you might have to help this great program go forward. All right, let's check the weather one more time.
Right now in Greenville, Spartanburg is 35 degrees, downtown 37, Anderson 34, and Clemson 39. Today it's going to be sunny and highs in the upper 50s.
Okay, well, here in business news, we find that Bernanke said, is according to Senator Chuck Schumer, a Democrat from New York, said Bernanke enjoys broad bipartisan support and that he has potential to follow in the footsteps of the giants like Paul Volcker and Alan Greenspan. Okay, so the choice of Bernanke is seen as a safe one for Bush, whose job approval ratings are at a low ebb. He wants to make sure the Fed remains free from political influence, but guess what? It doesn't work that way. Numerically spelling out acceptable bounds for inflation is what it's supposed to do, and of course it's running a fiat currency system, which is a fraud and something that is evil. We hate to see the Federal Reserve System even in existence. It's a terrible institution, and Bernanke is going to be the next ruler of the fraudulent system. Okay, and we have a couple other news reports that we want to try to go through here quickly. We're going to have an abbreviated show, as I said today, folks, but we'll try to get some of these to through. One is that the forecast for the GOP is dark. The Republican Party is in trouble, deep, dark trouble. The off-year election a few days ago clearly demonstrated many folks have had it with the grand old party, and the more storm clouds are on the horizon. The fact that the bright red state of Virginia elected a Democrat governor and the citizens of New Jersey elevated ultra-liberal like juror John Corzine to the top spot signal a major turn to the left in America. Well, let's hope it's not going to be just a turn to the left. We want it to turn to the right, because he is not, Bush is not a right-wing candidate or a president. He is a leftist. He is a neocon. He's somebody who wears conservative clothing, but his heart is far more towards the Franklin Roosevelt types or the big government interventionist types. Here he talks a good talk, but so do all fascists and dictators of the past. When it finally comes down to what policies they do, it's a terribly horror. It's a terror what they do, and it's a tragedy for the people in the land. All right, WorldNet Daily says that lawmaker terror war is spilling across the border. Concern rising following the arrest of Al-Qaeda suspect in Mexico. So here we have the terror war spilling across the border, according to WorldNet Daily. U.S. lawmaker says elements of the war on terror are now spilling across the nation's southwest border, and that colleagues he's spoken to have seen the problem firsthand, as he has, say they felt safer during trips to Iraq than they would have in a pickup truck on our southern border. Representative John Culberson, a Republican from Texas, also says there have been an increase in apprehensions of so-called special interest aliens, or SIAs, aliens from countries where Al-Qaeda is known to be in operation, along with the U.S.-Mexico border, and that American law enforcement and intelligence agencies are aware of it. Of course, having read all this stuff about the inside job that 9/11 probably was, with these the physics professor from BYU telling us about this, maybe Al-Qaeda is not so much of a threat as we thought before. I mean, this is just Bush telling us it's a threat. I mean, I never heard of Al-Qaeda before Bush brought it up, and doesn't mean it didn't exist. I just hadn't heard of it before. All of a sudden, it became very prominent, sort of the whipping boy or someone they could point to it and blame, and then go and use it as an excuse to attack other people. I mean, it may be the whole thing is a fraud. And maybe we don't have to worry about Al-Qaeda operatives. Maybe they're not that interested in terrorist acts here. Maybe the terrorists we have are right on the banks of the Potomac, especially in the White House. Could be. Here's something else. Tom Tancredo says he blasts SHIELD for religious groups. He says by allowing illegal immigrant volunteers, a new law will aid terrorism. This is from the Denver Post by Ann C. Mulkern. A new law that insulates religious groups from prosecution if they use illegal immigrants as volunteers drew outrage Monday from U.S. Representative Tom Tancredo, who said it will protect terrorists and he'll work to repeal it. This provision opens a hole in our immigration system so big a terrorist could drive a bomb truck through it, Tancredo, a Littleton Republican, said in the statement. Terrorists in the United States have used religious organizations as fronts before. He says this provides a legal cover for any church, synagogue, mosque, or group that calls itself a religion to aid and abet illegals who may pose a national security threat. Written by Senator Robert Bennett, Republican from Utah, the provision shields religious groups from federal law against knowingly transporting, concealing, and harboring and shielding an illegal migrant. The law no longer applies to religious groups such as the illegal, so long as the illegal immigrant is volunteering in a religious capacity, such as work as a missionary or in a soup kitchen. Well, I'm concerned about some of this, and I can see how you could look both ways on this and see something of the truth here. The fact is, as far as Christians go, I have no aversion about having Christians come to this country. I don't care if they're illegal or not. If somebody is oppressed in some other place and they want to come to a place that's relatively free, although we're losing our freedoms rapidly here, then I'm all in favor of them coming. I don't care if they have a green card or a visa or anything else. My primarily allegiance is not to America, people. My primary allegiance is to Jesus Christ and His church. And it doesn't matter that the church is located in another place under another political jurisdiction or that the people speak another language. My first obligation is to them after Christ Himself. And then only in a very distant second or third, if you will, it would be to people who are lovers of liberty, wherever they may be. In other words, I'd much rather support someone in Chile who's a classical liberal who loves liberty, rather than a typical socialist or a John Kerry or a George Bush type here. My allegiance would extend, you know, a distance, third place, to those people wherever they are found in the world. And I could have emphasized people here in America because, you know, that's the place that I live. But anyway, our priorities are all wrong when we try to discriminate based on, you know, our political allegiance, where we're born, rather than our Christian faith, which is the only proper way to discriminate as far as a Christian is concerned. But having said that, if there indeed is a way that people will use such a provision to smuggle terrorists in that would actually attack us, if that were true, then we would not want any such policy that would undermine our defense, because self-defense is something that we can and should, as Christians, undertake. There's just no doubt about that, and I've demonstrated that in my writings and in my new book coming out, The Christian Theology of Public Policy, Highlighting the American Experience. That's going to be even more clearly stated. So at any rate, we need to take care to have our priorities right, and then only promote those policies which are in line with biblical principles. And unless we prove that this system or this policy is going to actually bring in terrorists, then I would not be opposed to it. So I guess the jury's still out on this one a little bit, but either way, we need to somehow have something to do with assuring that our public policy ideas are based on biblical principles. All right, remember our phone numbers in case you want to get in at the last minute here. Are 864-244-9904, 864-244-9904. You can also try 864-244-8177 or 864-201-6955. Okay, let's pick another story here as we go along. How about this? The War Between the States, America's Uncivil War. This is by John J. Dwyer. The War Between the States was an uncivil war, to say the least. The War of Northern Aggression. And I can't read the whole article here online, but there's a couple good quotations out of here that our research staff has highlighted for us. History is his story, God's almighty work of calling out a covenant people for himself in space and time throughout human history. That is indeed what history is. We believe that's the Christian worldview. He's skipping on. He says, it is true that Abraham Lincoln towers over America, American and even world history for his leadership in the war. Of course, as our research staff keenly points out, Mao, Hitler, Caesar, and Uncle Joe Stalin, etc., were towering figures too. Got to remember that. But it is also true that the people fought for many different reasons, that slavery drove neither the United States nor the Confederate States to war. It is true that the North and the South had many real and, by 1861, even foundational differences. It is true that the Founding Fathers' vision for America and their Constitution were derailed, not preserved by the war, its outcome, and especially its aftermath. And the story of Abraham Lincoln is more interesting, more tragic, and far more complex than received American history has taught us. Yes, we believe that. He funded a government more powerful and expansive than most Southerners believed the founders intended, and the Southerners were right, frankly. And as the loss of the Tenth Amendment after the war shows, it did indeed undermine all that the founders stood for. The South was crushed through an unprecedented for America campaign of total war, and the North had to abandon not only the precepts of its own Constitution but those of its Bible to win. It did. And of course, in the article, the guy's talking about creating a nation here. It was reconstructed after the war to build a nation. Not in a biblical sense, because a biblical nation is just an ethnic aggregate, but there's a nation in the sense of the political sphere. But the history of Abraham Lincoln is little known by people. Abraham Lincoln was a scoundrel. He was America's Stalin. He was probably the most evil president we've had. I mean, FDR and my good friend Ben Graydon like to bring up Woodrow Wilson and put them up there too as being potentials for being, you know, taking the crown for most evil or pretty close to it. I think even Ben would agree that Abraham Lincoln was the worst, because it ended with him. The experiment ended tragically under Abraham Lincoln. He was an evil man who did evil things, and that is indeed the legacy we now face. All right, we're going to be turning on a CD here that's going to feed right into this. It's Ray Berry talking about why I'm a Southern nationalists. Now, he's not using nationalist in the sense of national being nationalistic or nationalism, but he's in favor of a separate southern people. The southern states and any of the western states that want to come along would peacefully secede from the Union so that the southerners can preserve their culture and the heritage of the founding fathers, while the northeasterners and the upper Midwest folks, Chicago, Michigan, those kind of folks, want to go headlong into slavery and into tyranny and into something the founders did not envision. Let them go their way. Let us go ours. That's what we're talking about when we say being a Southern nationalist. Now, having mentioned that, I'm also going to tell you tonight there is a meeting of the League of the South. It's the monthly meeting in Greenville. It's at the Prime Sirloin Restaurant. It starts at 6:30 for dinner. 7 o'clock is the meeting. Hope you can attend the Prime Sirloin this evening, at the Prime Sirloin this evening, right across from the Greenville Mall on Woodruff Road in Greenville, 6:30 p.m. or 7 if you want to miss dinner. Actually, I think you have to buy dinner if you go into the restaurant, at least a dessert bar for $2. So come for dessert or come for dinner, either one. And come join us and make sure that you mention you heard about the meeting tonight here on the Tyranny Response Network. I'll be there, have my family with me. Hope to see you there this evening at the Prime Sirloin for the League of the South meeting. Okay, well, we've enjoyed this abbreviated broadcast of Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Stay tuned, though. You're going to love this presentation by Ray Berry on why he is a Southern nationalist and why he formed Dixie Broadcasting and why he believes that we must secede from the empire up in Washington, D.C. Instead of trying to reform it, we just need to try to leave it. And we're with him wholeheartedly on that. All right, you've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Glad you joined us today, and we'll look forward to having you back again tomorrow morning at 7:30 or so for another edition of Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Until then, God bless you.
Thank you for joining us today on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We hope you will be with us tomorrow morning at 7:30 right here at the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.